You are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 156, The Good, the Bad, and the Incredibly Expensive.
Welcome to episode 156 of the Furlough Bros Podcast.
Today is September
2002.
I'm Matthew Furlough.
And this is my brother of 28 years and
co-host of three,
James Furlough.
Yes, that's right. Oh, I should probably hit record, huh? Dang it, I hate it when I do that.
Do we want to start over?
Nope, we're good.
Okay, we're rocking and rolling.
It just means I'm dependent on YouTube. Don't mess it up, YouTube.
Come on, Google.
I'm going to download you later.
Yeah, Google it. Cool, yeah.
What is this? 23 years?
28 years of brotherhood, 3 years of co-hosthood.
That's right. It's been 3 whole years, huh?
Yeah, 156 episodes. I think technically it's either next week or the week at, or it's between this week and next week. So we haven't actually done a full 3 years yet. I did a little bit of math because it actually comes out to there's 152 and a half weeks in 356 days times 3 divided by 7, whatever that math works out. Basically, the long and short of it is that, you know, it's basically been 3 years that we've been doing this show. It's nuts.
Wow. It feels like it and more.
I appreciate that. Yeah, man. It's been a day. I just realized, man, this is probably not the... Man, I probably should have asked this question before the show started, because if you don't know what I'm about to talk about, it's going to be rather surprising. But did you hear about the... This is really great fare for the beginning of the show. I don't even know why I'm going here. I'm not going to do this. Never mind.
I want to know now.
This is okay. To our listeners, we love you guys. Sorry for the super depressing news. Did you hear about the death in the family?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I did.
Yeah. All of a sudden, I had this horrifying moment of like, you know, all right. So for those of you who don't know, our pet cat of 17 years passed away last night, which is a bummer, but she was also 17 years old, and it's what happens to cats when they get that old. But I just had this horrifying image of me telling you, like, breaking the news live on air to our audience and you at the same time. And I was like, why did I even go down this road? This is a terrible idea.
No, I figured out what was going on when I saw the text messages the other day of the cat with our sister hanging out. And I was like, yeah, sounds like it's coming down the pipe. And then I guess our mom posted it on Facebook before calling or telling me. And then she had this frantic freak out where she was like, oh my gosh, I need to call or text James or something before he reads it on Facebook and reads it there first. And so I was busy. So all of a sudden I had all these text messages. You need to call. This is really urgent. And the second I saw it, I went, oh, I know what it is. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I had thankfully they called me last night.
Did you say goodbye then?
I did, actually. I worked 9 hours yesterday. It was rough. And I got done, and Mom was like, you should probably come up to the house and say goodbye. And I was like, I'm exhausted. Like, what's the chances that I can get up there just Sunday afternoon? And she was like, and our mom was like, yeah, go for it. And our dad in the background was like, probably tonight's a better idea. And I was like, okay, I'll make the trek. So made the trek, and I'm glad I did. But yeah. Anyways, I do. Oh, you
what
know
a
what
topic!
Right?
I've got a better one. I've had a death in the family as well.
What is that?
This is no longer my phone.
Oh man, I'm looking at an iPhone 4S. Yeah.
Yep, iPhone 4S.
Wow, that is old school.
I'm trying to remember how I was able to see the screen. I have to squint to read the text, and that's because I have this guy.
Dun, 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 dun.
Size comparison. Here's what I did. I had this 4.3. Now I have a 5.5. It's like twice as big, essentially, when you do
the math.
Surface area math. It's big. And I can tap, and then I just use my little finger here, and it signs me in, and it has me texting you. And
awesome.
Yeah, I got it, and I took the opportunity to I'm not purge my apps is not the right way to say it, but instead I was like, no, I will selectively choose which apps to install. Don't just redo my phone totally. So I think I only reinstalled like half my apps, which were still like 50, but
right,
you know.
So I this is not dead yet, as it is still in my hands, but it is on the chopping block.
That's the Nokia 42 megapixel. What is it? The 240 Lumia.
I'm going back to, you know what? When I first bought the phone, if you remember correctly, I was calling them, I come up with these stupid nicknames. I hate it when other people come up with stupid nicknames, like when they would call the iPad the Maxi and the MaxiPad. I was like, it's just a dumb name. Like, it's, you know, just go with the trade name. And every once in a while, I'll have these, like, you know, moments of momentary creativity, right? Where I'll be like, you know, we'll call it the X-Bone or something stupid like that. No.
Yeah.
This one, if you remember back a couple years ago, and then like quickly I'll realize, no, that just sounds stupid. That's not actually creative, and I stopped calling it that. Well, this one I used to call the Leukemias, like the Leukemia 920s. And I'm coming back around. I think it's deserved. I think this time around, James, it's earned the nickname.
Really?
So as part of
Dead
the
on walking, huh?
Part of the on-show experience, I want to do this for you, James. I know we should talk about this later in a little more depth, but I'm so ready that I'm doing it right now. That's right. This is as you can see, this is the sim tray.
Yeah.
I'm popping out. I've not done this since I got the phone up and running. I have not once, despite my continual temptation.
And for those of you who don't know, Matthew called me in the middle of the week and said, do I really have to keep this phone for a week? I hate it. Can I just switch now? I don't think I can make it till Saturday. And I had to give a little pep talk in between my laughing. And like, no, stick it out. Try it for a weekend. See how it goes. Full week. Maybe you'll get used to it. Maybe you'll find out that you love it. And you were just like, no. Can I just return it right now?
Yeah.
So you didn't like it, huh? Didn't love it.
Did not like it. And I have been known in the past to come around on these sorts of things as you become accustomed to. You know, there's a difference between things that don't make sense, that are bad design, and things that are just not necessarily poor design, but are more along the lines of what's the word I'm looking for? You're just unfamiliar. You know, just because you're unfamiliar doesn't mean it's designed poorly. And
right.
I think I gave myself enough time to determine whether or not the phone is poorly designed or if I was just unfamiliar, and I can say with 100% certainty that I hate that phone.
Really? Man, I'm surprised, to be honest.
You know what?
I mean, I don't know, because last time I remember you talking about, you were like, you know, it's good. There's a few things that are annoying to me. I mean, last time, what was that, like 2 years ago now? And, you know, and I assumed, like, you know, it's a smartphone. It's Microsoft. Sure, it's not maybe as good, but, you know, it's got to have redeeming qualities and be good, and I'm not hearing that at all from you.
Nope. So do you want me to do this now, or do you want to get into the heart of the show and then
Oh, yeah, I guess we still technically are in the intro, huh?
Yeah, okay, let me just do this real quick. So this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, and by that we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, last but not least, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure so he doesn't get in trouble. That's actually the only reason I think that we need to do the intro, technically speaking. But
yeah, Good point. I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions of themselves or their partners.
Right, right. So, yeah, if you want to follow me on social media, which I'll be able to do again because I'm back on iOS, my Twitter handle is at Matthew D. Furlough. Oh, don't do that. Oh, no. Oh, this is going to be a nightmare. Apple's not completely without blame for some of my frustration. I'll be completely honest, but I'll be completely honest in 30 seconds. So also, my Instagram is NextWigan4, and my PlayStation 4 user game tag thing, same thing, NextWigan4. Come and play Destiny with me.
Okay, keep that in mind. I am James Furlough. At James Furlough, jamesfurlough.com, James Furlough everywhere.
Everywhere.
Including AirDrop, which I now have. I don't know. Do you have usernames for that? I don't think so.
I don't think so, yeah. No, I think you just got to be within Bluetooth. Okay.
Did you say Bluetooth?
Bluetooth?
Man.
I think that's technically racist, but...
I've seen that. Okay.
Anyways.
tell me about this. So why do you hate the phone so much?
So back when I tested it 2 years ago, there was a couple of things that I liked about the phone. And number one, I thought that the overall design aesthetic was first in class. I really, really liked the flat look with the, you know, with all the everything moving and tumbling and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I thought it had a first-in-class keyboard. I was a big fan of the keyboard. I had forgotten some of the things that really drove me crazy, like the fact that you're pretty much limited to Internet Explorer, which is awful. I can't believe that really? It's still this bad. Yeah, it just is astounding to me. Of all of them, you know, just, you know, pushing about how good everything is and how much better it's gotten. And you know what? I'll give them credit. It's gotten a lot better, and it still is way below par on Chrome or Windows. And it's like one of those things where, like, this is so, you know, I spend a lot of time surfing Reddit.com on my phone, and I always do the compact version of the site. Well, the way that it renders it like it's a tablet. So everything is tiny, and the touch zones are untouchable. So whereas on the iPhone, you could do the whole thing one hand, everything's like framed on that. Not far. It's a miracle that only Apple has figured out how to get sites to render right. No, everybody else does it just fine. And then there's, like, little crazy stupid things. Like, when you get the iPhone, and I'm gonna be citing the iPhone a lot more, and I think as I get Android, I'll probably be citing them too. So you pull down to get to your notification center, right? Your little cool site. Well, Microsoft does the same thing,
right?
But they built in all their controls to, so on iOS, you flip up to get all the controls. You flip down to get all your notifications. Well, they built all that into one notification center on Windows, which is similar to how Android works. But the deal is that, like, if you turn it into landscape mode when you're in when you're in Internet Explorer, you can swipe left and right to go forwards and backwards in pages, which is a cool feature and one that I use all the time on iOS. Doesn't work as well on Windows, period. It just doesn't work as well. It doesn't register the flips. You got to be really deliberate. But then it goes one step further, where when you put it in a landscape mode, the little pull-down menu doesn't follow the landscape. So instead of flicking backwards in pages, which is something you do all the time, now you're pulling down that menu, and it's scrolling across in portrait. It's just like, what is going on here? Why would you just set it up this way? Like, this is just craziness. So that's point number one. One thing that they got better at is so your text messages. It used to be when you went away from your text message page, it would delete whatever you had typed in there, and you'd go back because they had this really weird way of, like, when you move apps out of the main pane, they go completely, like, into hibernation, and they'll forget whatever state they were in. They've gotten better with that in a couple of areas, like text messaging. They've gotten it's just as bad in any of the third-party apps, though. You know, whereas, like, they actually run in the background in Android, and Apple does a really good job of faking them running in the background on iOS. They don't run in the background at all on Windows, and it's just as, oh my gosh, it's so slow. And, you know, it's like, I try to separate these into different categories of what to complain about, right? You know, it's like there's virtually no third-party support for major providers except Facebook, because Microsoft is a partial owner of Facebook. So there's an Instagram beta. There's, you know, Facebook, the main Facebook app and stuff. But like,
still, it's a beta. It's not a beta. Yeah.
And it's not as good of a UI, but there's nothing else. It's like there's no Google services whatsoever. There's Google Search. That's it. Cortana, like your main helper assistant, it works pretty well.
Yeah, that did look interesting.
Yeah, it works pretty well for a small number of tasks. You know, asking it for directions, it's pretty good at. But turns out there's no inboard timer app, so you can't just say, hey, Siri, start a timer. Which, BT dubs, if your phone is plugged into the wall, you can actually just say that, and it'll start a timer. You don't even have to press the home button anymore. It's kind of crazy.
I know. I've actually I've had a few situations where I'm like, I wish my phone was plugged in right now.
Right?
I should try it tonight.
Yeah. So it's just like from a social media perspective, it's a terrible experience. But, you know, in third-party support, it's like it doesn't come with an inbuilt flashlight app. It doesn't come with an inbuilt timer app. You know, the internet connection's pretty good, I guess. That's fine. Their map solution is so crazy. Oh, my gosh. It is insane. They have two maps app that are both Nokia applications, right? One is like a straight up maps app, like you would, like Google used to be, and one is a navigation app.
And separate, huh?
Yeah, they're separate, and they're like, and there's like shared compatibility. There's shared functionality that some one will do one thing, one will do the other, and they sort of have a similar design aesthetic, but it's not exactly the same. And it's just so clear that they had two different teams working on them simultaneously, and neither one completely built together a suite, so they just launched both, and it doesn't really work. And then it's like you got this 41 megapixel camera, right, that you're like, oh, this is awesome, 41 megapixels. So I'm going to be able to take great pictures. And I'll be honest, it does take very nice pictures. There's a big dot. There's an ellipses coming. It does take very nice pictures by most standards. I'd say it's on par with anything my iPhone can do, my iPhone 5 that's 2 years old. And it's not necessarily any better. The digital zoom, yeah, the digital zoom works just fine. But this is the problem. A 41 megapixel camera, if every pixel takes as long to take a scan as it does on the iPhone, which because the pixels are bigger, it's not the case. They actually take longer because they're so small. You have to give them a little more time to react. But you're still talking, right? You're still talking five times as much time to take all those, to process all those pixels. So basically what happens is it's really slow when you know, it's got like this outside button so that you can just hit the button anytime to pull up the camera app and then take a picture. And it's supposed to, I thought it was the coolest feature with the 920. It's like that. It was like it was a camera. That was the whole point. You hit the button, the camera apps up. You hit the button again, and you take a picture. With the 1020, because the camera is so massive, I went to an Oakland A's game this week. Got to go into the box seats and stuff. It was really cool. And there was this wacky dude who came to visit, like, and came and played a drum, and was playing like a ukulele or something. I don't even remember. I would be able to remember because I was
ukulele is very different. Drum, ukulele, flute, who could tell at that
distance? Yeah, right. You had a couple of different instruments. But it was like I whipped out the phone to take a picture. And it took so long, his little 30-second thing was done and over before he walked out the room. Never got a picture or a video. Just awesome. Like, yeah, thanks. Nakia. That was wonderful. That was great. I mean, and this is all above and beyond the fact that it's just not possible to do data tethering with this phone because of a bug that they haven't fixed yet. Like, I just sit there and I go, like, there's a comedy of errors. There are bugs, clear and blatant bugs, where things just don't work the way that they're supposed to, where screens will disappear and things will pop up over them at different times, and things aren't working in conjunction the way that they're supposed to. It's just broken functionality. Then there's the lack of third-party support, which is just that's not Microsoft's fault per se, but from an overall experience perspective, it's awful. And then there are the things that are actual design choices by Microsoft, their best attempt moving forward, and they're just terrible. Like the fact that the pull down screen doesn't follow the rotation of the phone, so gestures stop working in different apps based on what rotation you're in. Hmm. Like, that's just, how do you even get to the point where you let that go through? Like, come on, guys. And not to mention the fact that this really drives me nuts. This drives me crazy. The keyboard doesn't work as well. And if you remember, I complained about the fact that the keyboard doesn't work as well back earlier this week. And I said it's almost like everybody else got a lot better and Microsoft stayed still. And actually, as time has gone on, I'm quite positive that that is not the case. This keyboard has actually gotten worse. And the reason why I know it's gotten worse is because they added a new feature. They added swipe text. And you can't turn it off. And the problem with swipe text, the problem with that whole thing in general, is that it's just not as accurate. It's designed around the whole predictive typing, trying to get you to move faster and stuff, and just don't worry about your vocabulary. I'll be honest, I hated swipe to text on the Galaxy S3. This was 2 years ago. It's probably gotten a lot better. This one was a lot better than I experienced, but the overall keyboard performance, I think, is not very high. Especially because one of the things we'll do at work is we have to wear latex gloves all the time, which capacitive touch screens will feel through. And the iPhone, no problem with latex gloves on, typing and having it do what it's supposed to do. And it's a screen that's dramatically smaller. Couldn't get anything to type right on the Windows Phone. It just was a terrible experience. It was awful. And it just was like, it's the things of, and so you're left with like the one big thing, the one thing that I thought they did very well. I really do actually like it a lot. The overall design aesthetic of the software is very good. I like it, and I still like it. And the overall design of the hardware, even though it's not aluminum and beautiful, just the kind of the look and the curvature of the glass and the curvature of the case and those sorts of things, I think look very nice. And you know what else I've decided, and this is really random. It's not random, but it's just, I think it's really interesting that I think Johnny Ives loves the look of that device too, because the curvature of the glass, exact same look that the new iPhones has. The whole flattened look of everything, exact same thing that the new iPhone has, or like iOS 7. Like, it's just, he took so many design cues that were from at least a similar source, if not just straight up like trying to make it look like Windows Phone,
yeah,
without having to be Windows Phone. But the funny thing is that's what Android's doing too, is that, you know, all of their like material design stuff is about flattening the look and giving it a similar appearance to Windows Phone. And you just sit there and you go like, well, they did something right, and they sat around and waited until their advantage was completely lost. And now they've got nothing. And it's just it was awful.
So
it was
do you awful. Think that's a Microsoft thing or a Nokia thing that Microsoft has now inherited to be able to fix, or you know, like, what you thought? I guess it's all software. It sounds like, from a hardware standpoint, you know, Nokia got that part right.
It was all right. And I mean,
Microsoft would be in charge of the software piece, I guess.
The hardware experience wasn't terrible. Everybody who's picked it up has made the same comment. It feels kind of cheap, which I think is interesting.
Well, yeah.
That's not my experience, but it is a plastic back. It's a hard plastic case as opposed to the iPhones, you know. Aluminum. I've noticed a lot more broken Nokia screens this time around. Granted, there were none the first time I did. It was the first, you know, Windows Phone. But, you know, there's a lot of broken screens. A lot of friends had shattered screens. They immediately, as soon as I picked it up, they told me to get the insurance if I was going to keep it for any length of time.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, I just, I've... I shrug my shoulders and I'm just like, I don't understand how it's, I mean, it was so much fun last time to try out the different phones and get to see stuff, different stuff. And that's just such a
pain. Becoming an old curmudgeon.
I know. Well, but it was just so bad. It was so bad. You know, it's like, yeah, they do 90% of what a smartphone should do, but that last 10% is what makes them, you know, not awful, because you can't, you know, it, and I shrug my shoulders. It's just as like, this is the sort of thing that it's like, I try to convince myself that there are good engineers, there are really smart people that work at Microsoft, because I know them, I know that they exist, and then they come out, and then you actually use their products, and you just sit there and you go like, this is why Windows 8 is terrible. This is why the Surface can't sell. This is why they're having problems. It's this sort of an experience. Like, how did this even happen? Like, how do you get this far into the development? It's a brand new 8.1 service pack. It's like supposed to be their best offering. Like, I did everything right, and it wasn't like I was trying a year old software. You know, this is their one of their flagship phones, and it was just terrible. I don't know what to do with myself. I actually feel bad for my Stockholm syndrome friends who like really swear by the phone. Like, you just don't know. You don't know how phones are supposed to work. Like, you don't, and I think that's the other portion of this is that was really and truly my first smartphone was the 920, because I had the iPod Touch for a very long time up to that point. So I sort of sat there and went, I kind of have the iOS experience. I know what I'm getting myself into. But I you know, I hadn't really gotten the full blown, you know, I hadn't had it with me all the time. I hadn't downloaded all the apps that require internet connection. I hadn't tried those things. And then to finally get them and just realize, you know, get used to it and accustomed to it. It's just so bad. It's so bad, James. It's so bad. How do you do that? Oh my gosh. I don't even know what to do, James. I just don't even know what to do with that company. It was an experience, man. It was an experience.
Wow, man. Well, you're better for it.
Yeah. And you know what, though? And actually, you know what the most irritating thing out of all of this?
I love it. Yeah.
The thing that just drove me crazy every time I use the phone. My iPhone, I plug in my earphones as I'm walking out to the car and I listen to my podcast. I jump in the car, turn on the car. I don't touch the phone at all. I don't do anything. The radio comes on, Bluetooth picks it up, phone kicks over the audio over the main thing. And so it's like all of a sudden I'm listening to my music, listening to my podcast, whatever. I want to make a phone call. I put the earphones back in and I turn on turn on the phone and it plays. And if I'm not super thrilled about what channel it's going out, whether it's coming out the phone or out the monitor or out the headphones, there's a really easy place to switch that. There's nothing like that on Microsoft, on the Windows phone. There's no, like, central area to kind of control where sound is going and when. And they're just their music management. Early on, I was really, really, like, I had some complaints. And as I used the phone longer, I will say this. That was definitely a case in the first 2 days of unfamiliarity. There's actually a logic to how they do it. The problem is it doesn't always work, and if I need to change it on the fly, it's really difficult to. And they don't have a good solution for that. And I sit there and I go, you can't get away with that. Not to mention the fact the Fitbit app looks very good on Windows Phone, but the Bluetooth just doesn't pair like it's supposed to, especially if you're paired to something else. You see, have the iPhone playing tunes on through, you know, Bluetooth on the radio. Check, you know, what my steps are. It works just fine. Doesn't work with the Windows Phone. You're just like, what the heck? Like, oh my gosh. It's terrible, James. There's so many like little details like that that they just.
Well, at least it charged regularly.
Yeah, but I know what you're doing. Because it did. The battery life was about as long as my iPhone, which I'm a heavy user on my iPhone. I wasn't a heavy user on this phone because it couldn't do as much. I didn't have as much to pull, goof around with and do stuff. Went through the battery just as quick, and it took four times as long to charge. It was ridiculous. I've had the battery full once since I've owned it in the last week and a half because it just never was plugged in the wall long enough to get a full charge on it. It's just the battery. Yeah, the battery's not even that good. It's just as pathetic. It's just a pathetic phone. It's a pathetic showing, and it's like I realize that I'm being, you know, I'm nitpicking on quote unquote the details, but at this point, that's what makes the difference. That's all that's left is the details. Is it good or not? You know, they don't have you beat on price. They don't have Android beat on price, not even close. So it's just the details, the quality of the hardware and the software, and it wasn't there at all. It was pretty terrible.
Dang.
That was it.
So you're returning that phone, and you're going to get the Moto X?
Yes.
And the 360 watch.
That's the plan. It turns out those are number 2 and number 3 on the list of most in-demand tech products this week. Now, obviously, that they're...
and 3. Wow. I'm not surprised it's not 3 and 4.
Well, yeah, okay. I think my buddy lumped iPhone as a single product category. I think if you...
Fair enough.
Because I think if you were to break out all three versions of all three or both iPhones, it would actually be, you know, number 7 and 8. You know, most demand this week.
Right.
But what I thought was really interesting is the 360 is way more demand than the Moto X. Like, that's actually hard to get your hands on. Regionally, Best Buy had 3 or 4 iPhone 6 Pluses in stock, but they had 0 Moto X or Moto 360s, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, so the phone actually gets released to stores on Friday, so I'm gonna try to lock this whole thing down. So by next week, I'll be using Android. And then this, I think Apple deserves a bit of a beating too, because they were not innocent bystanders in this whole mess. iMessages and getting off of iMessages is an awful experience, and one that Apple deliberately makes more difficult, because they want to give you just a week of pain so that you're you've got to go in, you know, so that you're dropping text messages when you're first making the transition to the new phone. So when you're most sensitive to how much you hate the new phone, you're not getting your old text messages from your old phone, just enough time to go back and exchange it for a real iPhone, and in Apple's opinion. And I've that was so obviously going on, and it just like, and the thing is I realized that how the technology works, that it's a distributed network of keeping track of which phone says what details and stuff. And, but they deliberately make it difficult. And it wasn't until people complained a lot that they even got it to fix so that eventually it would pick up on the fact that you would turn it off. And it would be so easy to have a Boolean variable in your overall account of whether or not you've turned on iMessages or off iMessages on the phone number on your phone. You could do it at any point in any one of their interfaces, but they don't add that, so that there's no way to really efficiently distribute that information to other phones so that you don't miss messages. But they don't want you to get all your messages, because they want you to stick with your iPhone. So thanks a lot, Apple. That was wonderful. Great experience. I hate you too right now. Just a lot of hate to go around. And Google's no better. I mean, come on. I didn't even have Google Maps for a week. That was terrible. Come on. It was the worst. This phone is my friend, and I realize it's pathetic and kind of sad sounding, but it's true at this point. It's like, I need you, and you weren't there. You just didn't. It's like you got your best buddy. Did you go out to the clubs or go out to the bars every Friday night, right? And you go out and you got your plan, your game plan. You know what time you get off work. You're both gonna go work out. You know you're gonna go get dinner. You're gonna go to the clubs. You know, you're how you're gonna kind of deal with the crowd. You know how to, like, we're gonna start this way. We're gonna go this way. We're gonna talk to this girl. You're gonna be my wingman here. You're gonna be my wingman there. I'm gonna be your wingman here. We got a game plan. Like, you've got the whole thing, the whole routine, and you're just like, you're cooking the whole night. And every weekend you do that. And then all of a sudden, like one weekend, your buddy's out of town. And you're like, hey man, I'm gonna go and call my other friend because we haven't hung out for a while, and maybe he wants to do the same thing. It's super awkward. And like every time you try to, like, you need a wingman and talk to a girl, he just is like, he's either, like, not committing to the conversation, or, like, he's just overbearing. You're just like, dude, go on. And you just end up going home early and playing video games with, you know, somebody else, because you're like, this is stupid. This isn't working.
I've I've said this before, and I will say it again. You absolutely have to watch How I Met Your Mother.
Okay. I'm coming around. I think I'm just about ready.
Just promise me you'll watch just like the first 5 episodes, and then if you hate it, okay, move on. But trust me, you've described an episode right now. So
I believe it.
Yes. I understand what you're saying.
There's so much else going on in the tech news media this world. Me complaining about the phone right now. That's just, oh God, it was awful. It's terrible. So this is really good news. I'm going to move on to Microsoft destroying another cherished memory of people's. So Microsoft decided to buy Mojang, the creators of Minecraft, leading to one of my favorite jokes of the entire week. They spent $2.5 billion on Minecraft, and the top comment was, "What fools! I just got mine for $20." So they bought Minecraft, which is one of your if you remember, it was probably a couple of years ago now. I bought the game and I talked about it. It's a ton of fun. It's really cool, and it's on every different platform that you can imagine: Android, iPhone, PlayStation 2 through 4, all the Xboxes. I think the only major platform it's not on is Nintendo. But it's a very cool little platform that the company had built up, and they totally sold out to Microsoft. In Microsoft's defense, they're doing it for the Benjamins. They expect the investment to pay for itself by the end of 2015, which is a pretty good turnaround. Up. Yeah, that's a pretty good turnaround for that sort of a drop in $2.5 billion on a company that they'll make that much in the next year. And a lot of people have asked the question, so if the company was worth $2.5 billion in a year and a half, let's go ahead and sell it. And the dude, he goes by the gamer tag Notch, basically was like, look, I don't want to be involved. And I like building independent games, like small little platform things. I don't like managing a multi-billion-dollar gaming platform. And Microsoft offered me $2.5 billion to take it off my hands.
I feel like you could have hired someone to run it for him. But, I guess if you're not into it,
I was going to say, I think that's the thing, is he really isn't, and it's more money than he'll be able to spend in his lifetime. So, why not move on? And I think...
They bought it, and it was like the next day all the top execs, including him, quit.
Yeah. Right, yeah, because Microsoft was buying a platform, and they knew it. Because if they had wanted them to stay on, they would have... had them, it would have been an acqui-hire, and they would have signed contracts that said, you'll be part of the company for X, Y, and Z and stuff, and, for this amount of time, we'll pay you this much per year and whatnot, and your stocks will vest at this rate. But that's not what they wanted. They wanted out, and Microsoft is willing to pay the bills. I think it's really interesting that he was the quickest and loudest critic of Oculus Rift selling out to Facebook when they did, and immediately pulled plans of porting Minecraft to a Oculus Rift supported version, and less than 6 months later sold out to Microsoft for even more money. And you just like, really, really, dude? Like, I mean. I don't know. I very rarely anymore like flinch when people, talk out both sides of their mouth like that, where it's like, yeah, if you got, of course you'd go for the money if you ever got paid it, at some point you sit there and you go, is it really worth the art? am I going to pass up on a payday like that because I feel like I need to make this my life mission? And the answer is no. And that's fair. You're allowed to do that. Like, and that's the thing, is you're allowed to do that. And Oculus, they sold out to Facebook, but it's given them the ability to, keep their lead against companies like Sony, who, you know, are monsters in the industry and want to compete directly. And it's like they needed a massive financial backer and they got it. So how about you get off your high horse, apologize a little. Jeez Louise. Like, I don't know. I think
that's the kind of thing where it's like, you almost, it would be awesome. And they would never do it, 'cause you just don't. But if the Oculus founder, you know, CEO, founder, whatever, you know, had made some comment of like, hey, congratulations on the sellout.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Just,
See, the thing is Notch gets mixed into these, you know, he'll say something on social media and he'll get in a lot of trouble for it, and it draws a tremendous amount of attention because he built Minecraft, you know, and rightly so. Like, you know, I think, you know, you become that much of a public, you know, person, you gotta mind your P's and Q's a little bit. And
well, that's one of the things he was saying. He goes, you know, I feel like I've become a symbol, and because that's not what I want. It's not as fun as it sounds. And so it's like, I'm out.
It's not as fun as it sounds because you're popular. And
you can't say stupid stuff because people call you out on it. So.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that'll never change. It's even worse now because he's going to go back to independent gaming, independent game development. Like, it's like he sold out so he could really pursue his art. And I feel like it'll actually make matters worse for what he symbolizes. But it's like, I don't think the Oculus guys care. And rightly so. You know, they're going for something big. And I think Notch came up with a really great video game idea, Legos.
Brilliant.
I know. And, you know, it's more complicated. So it's tremendously more complicated than that, especially from a technical perspective. And he pursued it enough to get it, you know, to quite the standard. And I don't know. I'm going to be honest. This is me coming out right now. I'm sort of upset with the whole Microsoft world right now. And he's kind of annoying me. So this is my hope. My hope is that he continues to suffer and languish as a symbol that he doesn't want to be. And Microsoft slowly drives the entire company down into the ground. As I don't care. I hate it all. Bad mood.
Well, they won't drive it into the ground. They'll just let it languish like everything else.
Yeah, right. I did find this interesting. I was definitely contemplating buying Minecraft for my PlayStation because, you know, well, I got a PlayStation. Why not? Yeah. And this made me hesitate a lot. And I'm trying to think of a good reason why I should hesitate. Is there actually a good reason, or is this just some emotional reaction to the fact that I'm buying a competitor software for, you know, for my hardware? You know, is there actual evidence of Microsoft being a jerk about that sort of a thing, and I should be wary that I'm going to drop $20 and in 2 days it's not going to be a supported piece of software anymore? Do I have to worry about that or not? And it's made me really hesitate about buying it and getting it and seeing. You know, I don't think they don't have a track record on it, so I think it's worth watching, especially when you compare it to, like, you know, other forays into hardware that they're doing with software. And, you know, just...
Well, yeah, Microsoft's smart. They'll keep the game around but stop development on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, they claim they've made no plans to slow it down. But it's such a moneymaker. Part of the reason why it's such a moneymaker is because it's supported on so many different platforms. So do you, you know, it's a $7 an app on the App Store. You know, would you dare slow down development for iOS? You know, because that's a serious amount of money that's coming in.
I want to know how this fits into Microsoft's bigger strategy. I just don't see it.
I do. They're a web service company now. What was his name? Nadal. He's been very adamant about that, and that's the one thing that I can see. This is, you know, is that the front end graphics of Minecraft and the mechanics of it is actually a pretty lightweight program. It's how it manages everything in the background on the servers and everything that's incredibly impressive. Now, as time has gone on, people have developed third-party texture apps and stuff, and it can become a very beautiful game from a third-party perspective. And that's, you know, that's definitely a huge selling point to the game in general. But from Microsoft's perspective, what they're actually selling is this core product that is, you know, a very light connects to a of computer technology. And what they're saying, I'm sure internally, is we'll just move everything over to our Azure, you know, suite of backend, all of our servers, and, you know, we'll make the game. They're basically doing what Google did with YouTube, which was, I think, which was, you know, we're going to support it from a backend perspective. The game's going to run flawlessly on a bunch of different platforms, and we're going to prove, and, you know, and not just in the enterprise, but in the video game world too, that this is what we're capable of doing. We can build a backend that can really support a massive infrastructure of different gaming. And if they did that, I think it's a smart move. I don't think it's a bad move on Microsoft's part at all. I
mean, How much money are they going to make?
Well, they said they spent $2.5 billion, and they said that they'll make it back by the end of 2015. Fiscal year 2015.
I'm just looking at their finances right now, their income statement. So last year they made $86.8 billion.
That's a lot of billions.
Their net income was $22 billion. I guess that's a 10% boost.
Yeah.
Of course, it's not pure profit, but okay. I guess that's significant.
Yes, I agree.
Well, I mean, there's some where it's just like, I'm just trying to figure out, okay, fine. You buy it, you move it over to your servers, big deal. You know, that seems like an awfully big hassle to go through.
Yeah.
To make some money. When, and again, I'm kind of like, it still doesn't fully answer the question of how it fits in with the core service. You know, is it an example? Are they going to leverage some of their technology for other services that they offer? I go, that would be the interesting piece. And, you know, and so then they can offer cloud services that sync awesomely or something. I don't know. You know, to me, I go, it's not about the game. It's about whatever that backend technology is, do they plan on using that? And I don't know, but that's the only way I think it really makes sense.
Yeah.
You don't buy it because it's a cash cow. That's just, I don't know.
It's not enough.
You know, at least like with Google and YouTube, that made sense because Google wants to, you know, they love data and they love, you know, mapping the online world and collecting all of it and putting it in an order. And video is a very intense type of data. And so they're like, well, if we control that source, we can see all sorts of things about it.
Yeah.
And they have, and it made sense. And that's why you can kind of see they have a desire for photos, and they just haven't figured that one out yet. And it probably bugs them to no end. You know, same with music and whatever. For them, they like that content. For Microsoft, they just don't. They're not in the content business, but they're like you said, they're in the platform business. But anyways, interesting.
It is an interesting question. It's one that I actually think I will go out of my way to pay attention to over the next year or so to see what it means for the company and to see what it means for, you know, the game.
Yeah. So switching to small stuff, let's talk about tip jars.
Okay.
How about this? Do you tip?
Do I tip? Yeah, I tip.
Okay, good enough. What about when you see a tip jar? Do you use that?
No, generally not.
Really? Why is that?
Because I have a very pragmatic perspective on tipping. I don't tip just because I'm expected to. I tip to get better service. So if I go to a bar, I tip very well because you keep going back to the bartender, same bartender, you know, drink after drink, night after night, week after week, month after month, and pretty soon he treats you like your friend. You get great service at the bar, and occasionally you even get free beers out of the deal, and, you know, when all is said and done, you know, it's not that expensive, but you tip well and you tip consistently. You do the same thing at restaurants and stuff where I could be recognized as a regular customer. Generally, where there's a tip jar, I'm not necessarily recognized as a regular customer. And because it's a tip jar, I'm not giving the tip to the person. They can't see how much I'm giving them. It's just sort of flashes into the tip jar. So that doesn't do anything for me. I'm not getting any extra service because I'm a big spender.
Okay.
And it's funny. I will tip well on bad service if I expect it to come back, because I want you to know that I'm a good tipper. That's the social contract, you know, that we've all signed when we tip. So that's important to me. So this new technology that I think you're about to tell us about, it's not necessarily something I will take advantage of. But go ahead, tell me about it.
Sounds like it. I was hoping you would say I don't do it because I don't have change on me.
Oh.
You went deep.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That's also a problem sometimes. Okay. I don't have tips on change on me very often.
Well, sorry, dip jar. whatever. So for those of you out there who don't use a tip jar because you simply don't have change on you, a dip jar has a solution for you. So essentially, it's a jar with a card reader in it. So instead of you throwing change into it, you put your card in, take your card out as if it were a ATM machine or something, and it'll charge your card, a tip amount, a predetermined amount that whoever is operating it, whoever has it, they can say if it's worth like 50 cents or a dollar or whatever. Now, what's pretty fun about it is it also makes a noise, like the sound of a coin dropping, so that they can recognize that you did it. In this article on TechCrunch, it showed a pretty hilarious clip, because they are all hilarious when it comes to Seinfeld, where George is he wants to tip a guy, and for good service, and he's like, oh yeah, we're gonna be bros, this is gonna be awesome, you know, kind of like what you were just talking about, you know, and George goes, and this is for you, you know, and puts the money into the jar. And when he does that, the guy totally gets distracted, and so he doesn't see it. And George is just like, oh, come on. And so he's like looking around, and so he's like, you know, does his face thing, and he reaches into the jar so he can get his money out so he could do it again when he actually gets credit for it. And, of course, when he's got his hand in it is when the guy pays attention again, and he's just like, what are you doing? Are you trying to steal from me? Get out of here. And he's like, no. It totally loses the friendship. Total opposite. Gets kicked out of the place. Pretty hilarious. So, you would resonate with that. It sounds
like. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
So the idea is, in this cashless society, there are people who want to tip, but because you don't have money, you cannot, and they're trying to solve that problem. And so it's just, like I said, it's a little thing. You do it. It does have space for real coins if you wanted to throw it in there. They just raised some money, $420,000 by Project 11, and which probably has 11 people or something. I don't know. Looks like they're based in New York. I think the New York based company. Yep. And they said that they can tell it's been working pretty well because they've kind of done a beta and they're ready to start making it and roll it out. And like I said, they know it's working well just because they have the numbers, but also because they wanted to run some tests and then get them back and keep doing it. And none of the companies wanted to give it back. So that's always a good sign. And yeah, kind of a cool idea where you can do it. Like, there's another one where it shows for like donations, you know, where you could be looking for donations from someone or, you know, whatever. And it sounds like it, you know, someone somewhere along the lines is paying for credit card fees, but
yeah, you're gonna have, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if you ever get to the first company that comes out with a, you know, Apple Pay compatible one. Because I feel like that's the direction that it's going to go, you know, especially for that sort of thing.
Well, they said they already have the trademark for Tap Jar.
Oh, nice. That was a good decision. You know, as a proof of concept, yeah, I think it's an okay one. And, you know, it's I get what they're doing. I think it's a good plan. They'll have some success with it. I don't know if it's the final solution, but as a stopgap, it's, you know, they'll make money off of it for a while. It's cool. It's a cool idea. So speaking of things that cost a lot of money, I just wanna toot my own horn for a little bit.
Have fun.
I will. So back in the day, we were talking about the Apple Watch and its impending launch and prices and stuff and what it was going to be and stuff. And I'd like to point out the fact that you and I were calling it out to be a health tracker. Obviously, you know, that was going to be a big component of it, along with, you know, being a sort of a device that allowed you to do smartwatch sorts of things. Definitely we were on the leading edge of that. Back when everybody was asking what's the point of a smartwatch, we were calling it a health tracker. And now that it launched, it's definitely that's where it's at. And I just want to point this out that I said that they should make the things wicked expensive. I thought that they were going to price them like a piece of jewelry. And I said, I'll bet it's over $1,000 for the watch. Right? Mm-hmm. I said that. Okay. One of my dilemmas is I don't really know anything about luxury watches, evidently. I kind of thought that a really expensive watch cost like a couple grand. You know, like $2,000-$4,000. That's a very, 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 very incredibly expensive watch, which is just not true at all. It's just not true. A very expensive watch is a $20,000 watch. A pretty nice watch is a $5,000 watch, which blows my mind. I can't, oh my goodness. I it's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that people regularly walk around with watches that are worth more than my car. And people that we know, people that are like very close to us, they're really expensive. And because I just, for whatever reason, I didn't have that in my head of how much watches cost, when John Gruber wrote an article about how much he thought the Apple Watch would cost, when the expensive ones especially, he attacked it from the same strategy that I had, or the same idea that I had, but with more of an understanding about what the actual market place looks like for that sort of a device. And do you want to have a bet on, or do you want to take a guess on what John Gruber thinks the cost of the high-end Apple Watch will be?
Sounds like more than $2,000.
A little bit.
$15,000, $20,000? I don't know.
So his prediction is that just the watch, not the band, just the watch, will cost $5,000. He thinks if they come out with a gold band, where it's actually the chain link gold band, because right now they've only shown a stainless steel version, he thinks that that will also cost $5,000. And the total cost of a high end, top end smartwatch will be $10,000.
That's a lot of money.
That's a tremendous amount of money.
Now, so I know one of the differences between, or one of the things that they will say about an expensive watch, like a Rolex or something, is that it becomes a family heirloom.
Mm-hmm.
That it lasts for years and years and years. And so
it keeps on ticking, as it were.
Yeah. And so you buy it once, and then you always have it. Whereas Apple's not exactly known for making, you'll appreciate this, timeless products. And so I see that as an issue. Why go out and spend $10,000 on a watch where next year they're just going to make it obsolete?
And see, that's one of the, so that is definitely a dilemma that, that Apple would run into. And John Gruber, I addressed it quite well, I think.
Really?
One of the things that he said is there's two solutions. Number one, the watch is going to have, because as far as pricing goes, basically what he thinks Apple's going to do is he pointed out the fact that they never called it a smartwatch. They only called them watches.
That's true.
They're not going to try to compete against smartwatches. They're going to compete against watches, particularly, you know, high-end super luxury watches. And the thing is that a $5,000 watch is considerably cheaper than a $20,000 Rolex. And right?
Yes.
And yes, it's about a quarter of the cost, if my math is correct. But the deal is it's only going to last for 2 years. So as far as actual status symbol goes, he's arguing that it's even more of a status symbol to buy a $5,000 Apple Watch every couple of years. And he said that he thinks Apple's going to come up with a solution for how to keep your watch up to date. One, there's probably going to be a pretty considerable buyback program because if there's an ounce of gold in the watch, which sounds like I'm trying to be like, oh, if there's an ounce of sense in this person, it sounds like you're, you know, exaggerating, but that's, you know, the reality of it. It's $1,200 worth of gold. I mean, it's going to have quite a bit of value in recycling mm-hmm. value. And he said that it would be really interesting to see if Apple either just has a straight up buyback program or if they have an upgrade program where they can take the watch apart and put new electronics in it. So if they get a better processor, they get a better whatever, they can put something better in. And they, you know, Apple's very used to this sort of idea where, you know, the 5 and the 5S, this, you know, presumably the 6 and the 6S, the 4 and the 4S, all have the same basic, you know, outside. It's not necessarily impossible to believe that they'll have the ability. They've planned ahead long enough to say, yes, you can basically just upgrade your, you know, for $1,000, you can upgrade your $5,000 gold watch. We'll give it a nice spit shine, and we'll put all new electronics in it. Yeah, he definitely he makes an argument for how they could do that. And I think the point of it all is that Apple really, really doesn't want to compete against smartwatches. They want to compete against the Swiss because what they'll do is they'll have this major price umbrella that they can compete within as opposed to trying to go against the Moto 360 at $250. And they're just going to come at it from a totally different perspective. And he thinks they're going to completely shock the tech media. This, the tech media is going to lose their head when they actually look at the price, which I think what's funny is I have a feeling that sometimes I'm amazed at how early on to these kind of trends that you and I pick up on. And like, by the time it comes around, we're like, totally expecting it, whereas you'll get people on CNBC like, I can't believe this is happening. This is crazy. And I keep wondering, like, is this somebody who really doesn't get it, or are they just faking it because they think their audience is stupid? I can't tell. We don't think our audience is stupid. And
I guess the other way to look at it, too, is they make computers that minimum are $1,000, and you could spend $10,000 on a computer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as if they've never made those types of products before.
Yeah.
And it's not about size, necessarily. You know, and so, I don't know, I guess you think about that, it's not crazy.
It's not. And if you think about who did they hire for the new Apple, to lead the Apple stores? Oh man, I can't remember her name. All of a sudden, I had it.
Rendit.
Yeah.
What's her first name? I can't remember now.
I
know you're talking about. She was in London this weekend.
Yeah, and she was not. What was the
Angela? Is that it?
Yes, I think so. It was Angela Ahrendts. Ahrendts. Yes, it's like, yeah. There's like too few vowels and too many consonants in her name for me to really know how to say it. Yeah, she was the CEO of Burberry, which is a high-end luxury, fashion group coming out of the British Isles, and she's a high-end luxury retailer. Like, that's what she does. She sells super expensive watches, amidst other things. They just hired Mark Newson, who was obviously a good friend of Johnny Ives and, probably had some input on the watch. But in general, they're looking at high-end, super luxury things. And they're asking the question, can we make a beautiful watch that is that has a computer in it, as opposed to make a smartwatch that's beautiful? And it's classic Apple disruption. It's like, oh my goodness, this is awesome. Which makes all the quotes of like the I love this quote. The Apple, this is a quote from the Swiss dudes. The Apple Watch is certainly a promotional tool to teach the youngest generation to wear a quote watch or informational tool on their wrist. Apple is preparing the generation to make it easier one day to wear a real watch with tradition, culture, heritage, art, and most importantly, soul. As such, I welcome the Apple Watch to and thank them for helping to promote and prepare the wrist for us in the Swiss watch industry. There's been, I don't know if you've been reading the quotes at all from the Swiss over the last week as they've taken a look at the taking a look at the Apple Watch, and they basically are just, they sound echoes of Palm is what I retitled the article, because it's so classic. You know, a computer company's not going to come in here and suddenly make a phone that, we've been worked really hard to figure out how to do this, and they're not going to just wipe us out, and they did. And it's funny because it's like, yeah, this first generation is not going to be crazy selling. It's not going to be the most, they're not going to wipe everybody. They're not going to take out the watch market this week. And there's still going to be a place for the Rolexes and the Swatches of the world and the super high end luxury mechanical watches. But they are not going to be the future. And anybody who thinks so is just kidding themselves. Like, it's when you look at it from the perspective that they're coming at it from, if they're not, cheap plastic pieces of garbage, and they can actually function as high end useful tools that are luxury devices. And it's, I don't know. I just, this is brilliant. And the best part about this is the sports version, the cheap plastic wristband, and the disgusting aluminum case and the cheap glass. I'm trying to talk myself into sticking with the sport watch. As it's funny, when they put up the big, like, with the brands, they said it was the watch or the Apple Watch, the Apple Watch Sport, and the Apple Watch Edition. The Apple Watch Edition being the gold one that's going to be spectacularly expensive. And because they put it that way, for some reason in my brain, I figured that the stainless steel one was going to be the cheapest, and the aluminum one was going to be more expensive, which is just craziness when you actually think about the value of the materials. I don't know why I thought that. I know how much the materials cost. The aluminum's cheaper. But that's not the case. The case is, the simple truth is, the sport one's going to be $356. And the best part about that device is, even though it's going to be the most expensive smartwatch on the market, it's going to compete relatively well with heart rate monitors out there. And it's going to come with all the other cool, Apple Watch innovations. And you sit there and you look at this device and you realize, man, they are going to do with they have the potential to do with smartwatches, quote unquote, what they did with the iPod, which is just blow everybody else out of the water. Because, yeah, they're the most expensive, but they're also the best. So there's that. The only piece of this puzzle that I think I'm not quite sure on how this is going to work out is the fact that it requires an iPhone 6 to work.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean...
Well, not a 6, but...
Or, yeah.
Five minutes. But it requires
iOS 8. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't open it up later to have functionality with Android phones.
They never will.
I know. But it's... Yeah, because it's going to act as an anchor for anybody who wants a serious health, health monitor. But it's just,
it's... We were looking at televisions and monitor or projectors the other day, and yesterday. Wow, that feels like forever ago. And I was just talking with the guy, and I was like, honestly, I'm going to watch most stuff on Apple TV. And he was like, well, you could get the Samsung Smart TV over here, and you know it has all those features. And I went, does it have iTunes? And he was like, no. Okay, I'm not going to get that then. You know, I was like, I am highly invested in their ecosystem, and they want to keep me there, as you noticed with iMessage. And so, no reason to open it up.
I'm
hanging on to my Pebble.
I think you should. It's ridiculously expensive, and I can't believe I'm going to buy one. But they're going
to
be awesome.
I'm trying to think. What will be my criteria that I can just publicly state like I did with the Pebble? When they hit it, I go, oh, great, I have to buy one now.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to say, like, it's got to be thinner, lighter, and longer-lasting battery.
Than your Pebble?
Like, no.
just in general. Okay, so that's how you gonna put it off till Gen 2. I get it.
Yeah, if I could survive until Gen 3, I think I would be happy.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
The other thing that John Gruber pointed out, and I thought this is gonna be, you're gonna love this because this is gonna be. Make you sound like a genius. He also said that the reason why they made the announcement when they did is because they had to in order to keep hardware from leaking out of the East. And I made the comment that I thought it was all controlled leaks about the iPhone and all the different stuff that was coming out because they were trying to, you know, keep other things under wrap. And I think they leveraged that, but I agree with you. As the more I think about it, the more I think, yeah, they just don't have any control. They can't, and they know it. And so they said, we want to control the message as it's being launched, so we're going to take the wind out of all their sails. And it's not going to stop people from buying the current generation of Apple Watch because there isn't one. It's just going to stop people from buying the 360 as they're waiting. So why not announce it early? But what John Gruber pointed out, and I thought this was really interesting, is that nobody outside of Apple members, Apple executives, had a fully functioning iWatch to play with. Everybody used a demo version of it. And his whole point was, he goes, it's so obvious to him that they are keeping stuff back. And he argues that it's probably significant stuff. They announced, you know, basic functionality of the health monitor stuff. They announced the basic functionality of Apple Pay, and they announced the basic functionality of, you know, the smartwatch aspect of it. Your three different categories of what it can do, right? But he goes, if that's all it is, it's kind of disappointing. But the thing is he doesn't think that's all it is. And I don't know what else could be involved in this, like, little mess that, you know, that Apple's doing. I don't know what else there is, what else they think is cool. But I think it's pretty clear that I'm willing to bet that he's right in predicting that it's not done. It's going to get better. They're going to sweeten the deal with whatever it's capable of doing. And like I said, I don't know what that means, and I do know what that means. It means that I'm going to raise my expectations so high it's impossible for Apple to meet them. I think, you know, they clearly didn't show off all the software, and they did that on purpose. It's not because it's necessarily still being decided on. It's because they wanted to keep back something, you know, in classic Apple fashion. You know, they didn't want to show you what the watch was capable of. For whatever reason, and they didn't want it. And most importantly, they didn't want to show the dudes that were standing there with the microphones and the cameras. You know, they all got demo versions of it. So I don't know. I'm excited to see where it goes. And I think it's, you know, every time you remind yourself that Apple doesn't think of themselves as a computer company or a phone company, they think of themselves as something different, something weird. And it's, you know, if you want to understand what they're doing and why they're the world's most valuable tech or most valuable company, you got to understand that they like to think different.
That's true. It's true. I'm excited for you to get one.
Right?
So I can wear it and try it out and see what it's like.
Yeah. I agree. You told me to remind you about a bead price story. I just read it on my notes.
Yeah. It was around pricing and the idea of charging more for something. Though I feel like what you said was pretty good, but I'll share the story anyway since you now said it. I can't remember the book. It might have been The Psychology of Persuasion or Why We Buy, two amazing books on psychology and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the books, it talks about this, store person had a whole bunch of stuff in it. One of the things that was in the store were some beads, and they were selling them for $10 or something like that, and they weren't selling well at all. And so this person was finally like, you know what, forget it, we're gonna slash prices. And so that person was gonna be gone for a week, and so he told the clerk there to slash prices and just offload them essentially.
Yeah.
So he came back a week later and they were all sold. It was like, awesome, cool, fantastic. And but then was looking at the sales figures and they were huge numbers.
Hmm.
And so he started to get a little confused and asked the sales clerk what she did, and she went, oh, well, I somehow got confused and added a zero to the price. And you're like, you might need a new sales clerk. But
right.
But all of a sudden they went from beads that were not selling at all to ones that were flying off the shelves. And, and so they started looking into this and trying to figure out what's going on, And so it's this idea of, and I experienced this, maybe it was the Tipping Point now. I don't know. I read too many books.
Right.
I feel like it might've been the Tipping Point because this happened to me while I was in Paris. And that's when I was reading that book, by Malcolm Gladwell. But, people are always looking for, context on how to make a decision,
Right.
Is something good? Is something bad? Do I want this? Do I not want this? Is this important or not? And so they're always grasping for, we're grasping for reasons. And one of the ways that you can determine if something is valuable or not is by its price. And, if something is priced low, we inherently go, it's cheap.
Right.
If something is priced expensive, we inherently go, oh, it must be really good, high quality, which is part of where, you get certain disconnects, like with the Lumia, to bring it back, where it's priced at parity with other smartphone device makers. And so we, on a grounding level, go, then it must be of equivalent quality.
Right.
And are shocked when it's not.
Right.
And because that's how our brains think. My fun story is while we were in Paris, we were going to the Louvre, and that's where they just have a bunch of artwork. Bunch is kind of an understatement. You can't see the entire place in a day.
Hey, that entire sentence deserves the understatement of the week. Oh, Lord. The Louvre. It's this place where they have a bunch of art. Wow. That's it. The Louvre. Okay.
That's it. Should see it once. It's nice.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool place. Check. They got a nice cafe.
Yeah. And there's a triangle on top. So anyways, you're going through this. There's this one really long hallway that has a bunch of art on the walls. I mean, quarter mile long hallway. Okay.
Holy cow. Okay.
Yeah. No. Yeah. This place is crazy. It was a castle. Okay. So everything's huge.
Right.
So we're going through, and there was a, who knows what's good art and what's not. I mean, there's just so much of it. There was this one set of photos that had been done that there was nobody around, nobody looking at it, and we thought it looked interesting because it was faces done with fruit. They took different fruit and they put them together in such a way that it looked like a face. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And so so I can't remember. It was either I had a picture with Jesse in it or she took a picture of me. I don't remember. But we sat there and we were looking at it and we took some pictures in front of it because we thought it was cool. By the time we left, there were four other people there who were taking pictures of it and, like, you know, standing in front of it doing it. Yeah, right? And it's not to say that we suddenly, like, picked out an amazing art. It was this idea of people are always looking for ways to figure out, like, what's important. So they'll use social cues. Oh, there's a lot of people who are buying and doing this. It must be good.
Yeah, look how many people are in line in front of the Apple stores.
Exactly. Must be a hot item, you know. And that's why websites and stuff will tout, here's how many users we have, here's how many sales we've made, because it gives social proof. If a lot of people are buying it, it must be good, it must be safe, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that's another example of it. And so when you think about the pricing of the watch, you know, whether it's $350 or $5,000 or $10,000, that's telling you something. Because for a lot of people who don't wear watches, they're trying to figure out, like, what's a good watch worth, you know, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they're going to sit there and say, you know what, if the Moto 360 is $250, which I think is pretty close to what the Pebble is. Pebble one might be like $150. I can't remember now. And I think the Pebble Steel is $250. But if they say, okay, there's that. Now you get this Apple, the low end is $350, but you know, it's Apple. So we expect that. But then you say, man, there's $5,000 version. You're going to pause and because they've done a good job with their other brand, other brands and products, you're not going to go, wow, way overpriced. You're going to pause and go, wow, what's special and different about this watch that it deserves $5,000 price tag? Mm-hmm. And you're instantly going to go, that must be a really good watch. Now, they got to live up to it, you know. Because this isn't art or beads where it's all in the eyes of the beholder.
Yeah.
It's got to have the functionality to back it up. It can't be, like you were talking about, just those other couple items and, sure, a nice UI, because people are going to go, that's not worth $5,000. They're going to have your Lumia experience. And, you know, so the chances are they'll be okay and they'll do it right. But that's the game that they're playing. That's what they're trying to do. It will probably work, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
That's, you know, they do their research and their homework ahead of time. So it'll be good.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I think they're going to sell a ton of them. I agree. My gut. What is going on?
My wife is eating, like, delicious ice cream without me.
That's rough.
Sad. It's so sad.
Don't worry, James. We've only got another 8 articles to go on. So
Android 1. Let's stick with the smartphone theme.
So,
right?
So one of the things Google finally announced the official, fully unveiled the Android 1, which is basically their super crazy cheap smartphone for India. Because they don't want to have what happened in China happen in India, where China just sort of took all their stuff and either cloned it or locked it down and basically locked Google out of China, even though Android is the most best-selling phone in China. They hate that idea, so they don't want to have that happen again, and they realize that they don't want other guys like Chinese competitors to come in and undercut them. So they have come out with a solution for making super crazy cheap phones to sell to a billion Indians. It's going to come stock audio or stock Android. Android Play will be auto installed and it gets automatic updates. Yeah.
They're slowly moving away from that open source model. I like it.
Slowly, they're sprinting as fast as they can. Not it looking bad. You know, they're just trying to. They're like, they're kind of like the bomb squad. Who it's like, you know, that old joke of, if you see me running, don't ask why. Just run faster. It's sort of like they don't want to freak everybody out, but at the same time they realize that it's just been an unmitigated problem for them because there's all this potential that they've, because how do they make money off of this? With data. And basically, China took the cake. They took the software and then locked out all Google search,
yeah,
Google Play.
They did what Amazon wanted to do.
Exactly. You know, except because they're a dictatorship, a communist dictatorship of 1.3 billion people. You know how many people hate it when I say that? People really dislike me calling them a communist dictatorship. They're not really a communist dictatorship. Like, yeah, but, I mean, I think technically they are. I realize that they don't actually wield the executive power of a dictatorship anymore, and they do a lot, but they're still they're avowed communists. They just don't act like it, and they're still it's still technically a despot. What do you want from me? Anyways, the point is China has been a jerk to Google, and so yeah, they're trying to prevent that from happening, and they're gonna sell these crazy cheap Android phones in India that'll pump all sorts of cool Android data to Google. They don't want an Alibaba to take over on their sweet spot as a search engine. We really should have talked about Alibaba this week because we're all going to be using them and they're going to take over the world.
It's all good. Did you get stock?
No.
Did you get in on that?
No, because I'm an idiot. You know what it is? It's ethnocentrism. I'm rooting for the home team, and I want Amazon and Google to survive. And when they sit there and say, yeah, it's this Chinese, to do well and be the world dominant company. And when they sit there and go, yeah, there's this Chinese company that's going to wipe them off the face of the planet. You're going to be using their products in 5 years. I like these ones. Hometown heroes. Come on, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right. Fair enough.
But I think it's foolish to ignore Alibaba because it is a mammoth operation, and I think I would be very surprised if they don't do quite a bit of damage to the American market share
right.
Android and Google or Amazon and Google hold. Anyway, so long and short of this, Google Android is going to absolutely crush iOS and everybody else in the, but nobody else is worth mentioning really, in the market share game. They're going to run roughshod over Apple in India. And they obviously are the big winners already, the quote unquote big winners already in China. Which, as a platform and a developer, that's good news. As a company, that's kind of indifferent news. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if in the next 3 or 4 years, Google's well above 90% market share when it comes to Android install base, and Apple is still running away with 50% of the profits. And actually, the way that sales are going, man, it sounds like it might even be getting worse, because the only real place where there's any profitability is on the high-end, flagship smartphones, your Galaxy Nexuses and your Galaxy Notes, to be specific. These super low-end, low-margin phones are slowly killing Asus and HTC and Lenovo and Panasonic, not allowing them to survive, because they're so cutthroat. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out in the long run. As Apple, if Apple moves into taking 65%, if they take a full 2/3 of all the profits and only hold less than 10% market share, it could be astounding.
You sit there and say that has to have implications for the long term.
It has to. It can't. If things can't continue, they won't. And that can't continue. Somebody is going to sit there and say, this is stupid. This is really, really stupid. And somebody's going to figure it out. And,
I think HP got really lucky that they couldn't get their act together and get into the Android phone game.
Yeah, I think so too. Because I think it is going to kill. I think HTC and Panasonic are going to get dragged, are going to get crushed by this whole thing. I think they're going to get completely blown away. I think Motorola might be the only one that stands a chance because a company, because it's a who owns them now?
Lenovo.
Is it Lenovo? Because I think Lenovo, as a Chinese company, they have the financial backing, they have everything going on where they could actually push out a new operating system and just, you know, and using their ways, because they're not a dictatorship, right? They could leverage enough of the Chinese population to actually build up a massive user base that that can do damage to Android and can take away part some, you know, where they could actually build up enough of a, they could build up a product line that could take some of that money back, because it's just insane what's going on. It's just like you said, it has implications. There's no way that this is sustainable, that the only people that's making any money are the guys that are, you know, because it's not that way in the car market. Yeah, Ford has to sell a lot more cars in order to make any money, but they're still making money, and you know, compared to Ferrari. And they're actually making a lot more money than the luxury guys. They're these billion-dollar companies that employ hundreds of thousands of employees, whereas, you know, Ferrari and Tesla even, you know, it's a couple of thousand, you know, it's 10,000 people, and they're making, you know, pennies compared to them. And it's because they're, you know, because it's all in the volume. If there's no, you know, how can there be so little value in volume? I just, it's crazy. It's crazy. I think what it means is that a lot of these companies need to go away. They just need to completely get out of the market.
Got to have some consolidation. Yeah.
Yeah. There's got to be like two or three hardware players that are doing any business at all. And so the prices can start to come back up and you can start to, you know, bring out, you can start to, what's the word I'm looking for? Alleviate some of the excess supply. So the demand can start to raise up. And I think Apple, Samsung, Lenovo is a pretty good bet on who the big three are going to be when all this is said and done. I think Samsung is going to stay on the Google horse, but I could easily see Lenovo decide that they want to go their own way, fork Android and just make it their own thing, which Google would love.
Yeah.
But
we'll see. We'll definitely see. In the meantime, 53, the makers of Paper, the app I want and would buy very first if I ever got an iPad, which I may in October. We'll see.
Woo-hoo!
I won't. I just spent $800 on phones. I'm not going to get that. So they came out with this cool thing called Mix, I guess. It's essentially a community for sharing paper. And so it started with this question of, like, what's your favorite PowerPoint template? And so the idea is you create a drawing.
That is an incredibly boring question.
But surprisingly pertinent.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. It was kind of cool. He said that who is the guy? There was a PowerPoint engineer. And back in the early 2000s, he said there was a thriving community of Microsoft employees building templates for the popular presentation software. Those who came up with the best PowerPoint templates within Microsoft were seen as heroes. But years later, no such community exists for PowerPoint or for apps like Paper, which many people use today to give presentations and storyboard ideas. So they've unveiled Mix. Essentially, you create a template. It could be a circle. It could be dots. It could be like line pages or whatever. And then you upload that to the community. And then you could be like, oh, I need a template to start my drawing with. And then you could download them from the community and, you know, edit it from there or draw on top of it, however you want to think about it. It's kind of a cool idea in the sense that you can you know, you can take an idea and then, you know, iterate on top of it. And it does a good job of following who came up with the original idea. And so, so you might do a picture. I could download it, edit it, upload that. And then someone else could get it and they would see that, oh, both James and Matthew worked on this or, you know, created this template.
That's cool.
You could look at the versions of it too, which is pretty neat. I just thought it was a cool idea, mostly because I love paper and I want to use it in the worst of ways. And I like what they're doing. It's this idea of, you know, let's create these templates and make them shareable to people for easy access to get people started and going quick.
This is only tangentially related, but it's kind of a weird sentence thinking about what our podcast is about. But I love paper. It's just, you know, given who we are and everything, it's kind of weird, right? I mean,
sure.
Maybe no party one. Okay, never mind. Anyway,
you know who I work for, right?
Yeah. Nothing you say.
I love the digital version of paper.
It's true. That is cool. That does sound really cool. And I think anytime you can build a community like that, you know, you have some real, real advantages in staying power. And 350's kind of got a little bit of an uphill battle because you got to have this really cool stylus that's only really cool for one app. And
they're trying to make it broader.
Yeah, and I think that they're the biggest thing that they can do to help themselves do that is to have a thriving community of users and really convince people that it's worth the investment for this single app. And having a lot of people working together and a lot of content is the way to do it. So it's a good plan. I hope they work well. I think they're a very cool company too.
Good, good, good. Another very cool company, Facebook, is working on a super private sharing app called Moments.
It just doesn't seem like
real.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't want to say it's oxymoronic, but it's kind of. It's super private to everybody except Facebook.
Trust us.
Tell us the things here that you wouldn't want to tell us on Facebook.
Well, it's not about sharing it with Facebook. It's about your friends, you know?
Well, that's what it is about for Facebook.
True.
Yeah.
I guess they're, and this is, it may not ever see the light of day, but the app certainly exists. It's currently being dog-fooded within it. But it's this idea that there's some things that you just don't want to share with everybody. Think about Path, right? It was this idea of, no, we have small concentric groups of friends, and we just want to share information there. And so they're kind of coming up with this. In my opinion, this product already exists in iMessage for iOS 8, where you have group messaging and you can opt in and opt out and you can share photos and video and voice and text, and it's there. And I feel like they solved a lot of those issues, and it is personal and private. But
I sort of like I have threads on Facebook of Facebook Messenger that is a group of people that we, you know, every Thursday night, or not every Thursday, frequently on Thursday nights we go and hang out and have a good old time, and we have the same thread going for a long time, and we can share pictures and messages and continue a conversation. There are also private groups where we can do the exact – that I'm parts of with similar friends that we do the exact same thing. So I do really wonder what problem does Moments fix. But, you know, if it's a better UI that does the same thing and there's no clear winner in the market, you know, why not try something out? You know.
Sure. Well, and it sounds like some of the thought might be that it could be about it could be a change in groups. You know, instead of doing in groups, maybe this Moments thing is a part of that. And I don't know. Dude, I don't know.
I don't know what their plan is. It sounds stupid. I mean, think about Slingshot. They're not perfect. I like it. I actually really like the idea of them just sort of spitballing ideas. I think it's exactly what Facebook needs to do, and I think that, you know, as long as they don't have a giant F on top of every app that they try, they're not going to dilute the brand. And I think the more that they do this sort of a thing, and the more that they kind of test out these sorts of ideas, what works, what UIs, things are better, and they, you know, incorporate them from thing to thing, you know, they, and learn from, you know, the perpetual beta stuff, that the same strategy that Google uses, I think they're going to do a lot better. So as a company, I'm glad to see them trying this out, because they have to, you know, it's the only way that they're going to come up with the next great, you know, idea that keeps the company going and, you know, compels us to continue using it. And that's like paper, you know, paper was the result of a couple of failed experiments all stitched together into this really, you know, thing that brought me back to using the Facebook app really and truly. And, you know, but they had to fail quite a few times before they got the magic right and put it into an app that is compelling. So go for it, Facebook. Have fun. I think this one's going to fail, but I think you'll learn a lot from it.
Jeez. Harsh.
I'm just being honest.
Just being honest. All right, fair enough.
So speaking of failing with apps, I'm really curious to see more about this. We will talk about this again. I guarantee it. When we know more, but I wanted to bring it up. If you notice that HealthKit doesn't seem to be working for your brand spanking new iOS 8 enabled smartphone, yeah, it's not. Have you even opened it yet?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it opens, but you notice wait. How like you can't really do anything with it.
Wait. What do you mean? I walked. I guess it would be a little low on my steps today because I had it sitting on the table. So as I walked 1,500 steps today, which I know is wrong, I'm closer to like 12,000. But like I said, I had it not on me most of the day.
Is that because it doesn't fit in your pocket?
No, it's because I was doing construction work, and I'm smarter than that.
Oh, my Fitbit died. That's how I'm going to excuse having no steps today.
So anyways... I've got my distance and my steps.
So okay, it did track a little bit of data, but you don't have it integrating with any other cool apps or anything?
No.
All right. Well, I
don't know how to. Actually, sounds like I can't.
I'm an idiot. So the health app probably does work, obviously. It's HealthKit that doesn't. So what it is it's all the APIs designed for third party applications. Google found some bug in the last couple of days and decided to basically nix the entire launching of any apps that require HealthKit, and has kind of like sent a, you know, has sent a lot of these health apps spiraling. Fitbit had this huge update planned for the launch of that was going to coincide with the launch of iOS 8. They basically had to rebuild their app and kind of mesh between some of the new iOS 8 functionality stuff that they wanted to do, but rip out all of HealthKit in order to get it working. And I'm an Apple developer, and I haven't gotten any information about why it doesn't work. So I'm assuming that they're only sharing the little bit of information that they absolutely need to with the apps that actually use it. Because I haven't gotten anything from Apple, and they're usually pretty good about communicating that sort of stuff when you're paying bucks to be part of their system. So yeah, they're keeping this one under super tight wraps, and stinks to be a health care provider, but it's obviously, you know, obviously for them, it's a huge deal. They think it's the future of their platform, and they don't want to, or it's a future major aspect of their platform, and they don't want to do something that can really derail it early on. You know, it's bad enough when, you know, a couple of starlets get their pictures hacked because they, you know, make easy passwords. But if somebody were able to get in with your health information, and especially through a back door, oh man, that'd be a disaster. So Apple seems to be acting with a preponderance of caution in this one.
But, that's okay.
Like I said, we'll talk about it more when we actually figure out what the heck is going on. So, da-da-da. So also, SpaceX and Boeing will be exploding people into space
nice.
By 2017. Very exciting.
Oh, that's forever from now. But okay, cool.
It's really not when you're talking about space exploration. So basically, right now we're still sort of sending astronauts up on Russian spaceships. It's a weird relationship. I don't know if you've been following the news lately, but it's a strained situation. And yeah, so we're trying to get off the Russian milk, as it were, and trying to do it with American companies. So Boeing and SpaceX got a combined $6 billion in funding to send, astronauts to the International Space Station. $2 billion went to SpaceX, $4 billion went to Boeing, and everybody was like, what the heck? Why did Boeing get so much money? It's 4.2 to Boeing, specifically, 2.6, to SpaceX, and everybody's like, why'd Boeing get so much more money than SpaceX? That's kind of lame. It turns out it's because Jeff Bezos' company that builds rocket components, which, who knew? Blue Origin.
Yeah.
I can't believe that I wasn't really aware of this. But basically, yeah, happened was it's sort of NASA's looking at it as a joint venture between Blue Origin, Boeing, and SpaceX, and they're all kind of taking equal size roles, but Boeing is overseeing Blue Origin's work in it. So basically, NASA is paying Boeing to pay Blue Origin, and that's why they got double what SpaceX got, because they're going to funnel that along to Bezos' company. But, yeah. That's exciting. That's a huge news for SpaceX for sure. You know, sending real live human beings into space. Can't blow them up.
No. Oh. Generally not.
Yeah, technically you can. Just ask NASA, but you're not supposed to. You
shouldn't do it, yeah.
It's generally frowned upon.
Not if you want to keep getting funding.
Exactly.
You get to keep going, man.
Oh, yes. I love it when I get to keep going. Okay, another interesting thing, and this is a quote that I feel like we could do an entire another half show on this one quote, but we won't, I swear. But it's the idea that music is great at selling everything except music. Mm. And it sort of answers a question that's been going on in the music industry and definitely been going on with Apple lately. And it was actually sort of that's a paraphrasing of what both Lady Gaga and her manager, who kind of launched her whole career, talked about. And it was this idea that Lady Gaga, you know, she's incredibly wealthy, made a ton of money, and how they did that wasn't necessarily by selling records. It was by selling a persona, and Lady Gaga has oftentimes talked about the idea that she's a studier of fame. She went through and watched what did other, you know, starlets, singers like Madonna and whatnot, what did they do at certain points in their career in order to gather the most media attention? Because as far as they were concerned, that was what was really valuable, was to have people paying attention, knowing the catchy songs, seeing the catchy images. And then once they had that, what they could do is they could sell everything else. And they could sell, you know, fashion, they could sell tickets, they could sell iPhones, they could sell Beats headphones, they could sell all these different things, and then they take a cut of that and would make a tremendous amount of money doing so, and she did. You know, and it's, you know, which is one of the interesting things about Lady Gaga is she's not, you know, she's not cute in a classical sense. She's, you know,
not really.
You know, which is unfair to, you know, she's definitely not ugly. I'm going to, you know, just throw that out there. I wouldn't throw that out there, but she's not like, I feel like if you just had a lineup of her and a lot of her, contemporaries, you wouldn't necessarily pick her out as number one. And that being said, she also has an amazing, just like classical singing voice. So how she became what she became was entirely manufactured with the point of doing this. Like, she's a case study in what the modern music industry is. And why that's worth bringing up at all and sort of starting this new paradigm of thinking is, what is Apple doing with Beats Music? What is Apple doing, you know, force-feeding U2 down the throats of all of their users, as some people would have you believe they did? I actually like this song. But it's the whole idea that U2 can't really make that much money anymore on albums. You know, not like they used to. They made a huge amount of money because Apple paid them, you know, out the nose in order to give away the album for free. But the reality of it is, what that does for U2 to take an upfront cut on the price of music is, you know, in order to make up money, sales on the back end, it's DVDs and, you know, product red stuff. I guess they don't make money off product red. But T-shirts and concerts ticket sales and those sorts of things. Like, when they sell all of the merchandise and then they sell their commercial and they sell their name and they sell their songs to Ford and they sell all of that different stuff, when they do that, that's where they make all of their oodles and oodles and oodles of money. So it's worth it to take a hit on selling of music. And likewise with Beats, you know, Beats isn't necessarily going to sell a lot of money, but there's an image there and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of different products that come along with it. And if they can position themselves as a company that values music, they can go a long ways. And if you remember back to when I did this initial experiment with the iPhone and the Lumia 920 and the Samsung Galaxy S3, my big ultimate decided to go along with it. What I said was, the sound drivers on the iPhone 5 were better than anything else out there. It just sounded better. And I liked my music situation better. And I sit there and I go, like, that's why Apple is going to spend as much money as they are on Beats. It's because they realize that one, that adage, that idea, that music isn't a big deal, but it's what music sells that's a big deal. And where they go with it in the future and how they manage that image is really, really, really important to the survival of the company. And I don't know, it'll be really interesting, in my opinion, to see where we go from there and how they deal with that. But in there, I think you'll see more and more moves on Apple's part that seem like they're giving up their music strategy and giving up a cash cow in certain areas of iTunes, when the reality of it is they don't want to miss out on what music sells. You know, they weren't selling music, they were selling iPods. The music sold the iPods, and that's why they made the music so cheap. And right, they want Beats to be the best music service in the world because it'll sell iPhones.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You love your music, don't you?
You know, it's funny. For being as terrible as making it as I am, growing up, I never really considered myself a big music freak at all. It started in college, and because I'm terrible at making music. I really am. I sound awful when I sing. I have no beat. Rhythm is the word I'm looking for. You know, I can't hold a note to save my life on any instrument, but I do really like it, and I think it's remarkably important, in a lot of different ways, and that's oftentimes undervalued. But
okay, fair enough, man. Fair enough. What we're not going to talk about is Larry Ellison stepping down as CEO, because he's not really stepping down, from what I understand.
You know.
He's just making it official what it already is.
Right. I'm not really in charge anymore. Mark Hurd is one of your big names taking over, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, the old boy. Rude former.
I didn't like him, so. Most people at HP didn't, so, you know, whatever. But it sounds like he's not the one running the show, so it's fine.
He's not. He's sales. He's a sales guy.
It's fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah, but he's a failed CEO of HP, so that's why he's the one that everybody's paying attention to.
I don't know about failed is the right word, but he's ousted, that's for sure.
That's kind of failed. Yeah, he was the one who did the sexual assault stuff, right? That was the sexual impropriety. Yeah,
he did. He has misrepresented his expense reports while having an inappropriate relationship with the employee of HP. Mm. Yeah, kind
of weird. Which is actually in a lot of countries considered sexual assault. Man in power. But I think that's not what we call it here in America. So, it's probably unfair to accuse him of that. he was pushed out on under thinly veiled reasons. They found reasons to push him out, right?
Yes, yes.
And I think we discussed that back when it happened because it was the idea
Well, he was doing things that were slowly killing HP.
Now it's all coming back. He was the one who wanted to sell the computer division, right?
No, that was a different CEO. He was only there for 9 months.
Well, okay. He went through a string of them.
He did, yeah. But, no, he was a guy who just kept cutting and cutting and cutting costs, which kept boosting profit, but...
Yeah.
Can't cut yourself to growth, so, you just make everybody miserable and want to quit. As opposed to, say, Google, who is thinking very, very, very long term.
Right.
And recently, Larry Page said that they've got a new Google 2.0, or they might call it Google Y, as opposed to Google X. It's even longer term programs.
Wow. That's... How long do you need to go, guys?
Yeah, I don't know. So, things that they're talking about doing, let's see, where does he list it? Big things like building cities and airports and, just making them more efficient, essentially. And so there are these ideas that are, and that was literally like the extent that he gave it, which is why we're only going to mention it. But this idea, like, Google expects to be around a while, and they expect to be doing even bigger things than self-driving cars and balloon-carried internet and things like that.
Yeah, maybe they should have a sit-down talk with the dudes over at Alibaba, make sure that they're gonna be allowed to stay around.
they'll be okay. They make plenty of money. They'll be okay.
Yeah, so did a lot of companies before somebody else came and completely disrupted their model. I'm sure there was a lot of radio makers in America, too, before Sony decided to get into the radio business. It's not unheard of for American companies to be disrupted by Asian competitors.
It's true. That's very true. But yeah, anyways, that's the show. That's what we got.
Cool. I liked it.
Good stuff.
I feel good about that.
Good. I feel good about it too. Let's see here. Twitcheroonie. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My brother of 28 years and podcast host for the last 3 years is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk, if I can get it to work, turn on. We will talk next time. Thank you.